the first thing that I think about when I think about this hole is warmth. Just feeling the heat. This is a par four. Probably one of the more difficult and technical par fours on tour. The first shot is this super interesting downhill, low ceiling, hyzer, but not too much hyzer, kind of hyzer stand-up shot with a putter, a mid-range. Some people even get super aggressive with a fairway driver. The landing zone for the birdie is extremely difficult to access off the tee, but it can be done with an aggressive play that challenges the ceiling. A lot of people will play a putter to a much larger, shorter landing zone, just playing for par.
Florida, hole, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes.
Oh. The heat. The heat.
That's like a
the heat,
a light or warm.
I was thinking Ledgestone.
Idlewild.
I was thinking Ledgestone.
I think about it because it's the first place of warmth all year for me. Like the first time after hiking up to that tee pad and you're baking in the sun right there on that tee pad. That's the first time all year for me because I've been in winter for 3 months. That's the first time all year that I'm like, holy cow, sweating.
If you would have said barbed wire, I would have got it.
I was about to say that.
Oh, then I would have got it.
I was getting there.
Wow.
I needed that point badly.
And Eagle, you want to tell the people what that was?
So, that was the last hole of the season. And we're not going to do hole guessing anymore.
Boo.
At least not for a while.
But
at least not for a while.
We are going to open up the category to not just holes, but everything. We're going to describe, we'll probably keep it in the disc golf world, at least for the next little bit. We could do courses, we could do discs, we could do shots, we could do players. I just think we need to broaden our horizons. And speaking of broadening our horizons, we have a guest. He's our first official full episode guest. We have Media Guy, our producer, the man behind the magic, Will Davis.
The third.
Thank you for that intro. That was good. I thought we were just going to stick with Media Guy, but I guess not. Yeah.
Will Davis.
But you're just so much more.
Everyone knows my name now.
MVP Media Guy.
There you go.
That's how my phone knows you.
Mine says Will Davis 3. Whenever I call you, Siri says, calling Will Davis 3. But if I ever tell Siri, I say, hey Siri, text Will Davis 3. She opens a text to Will Davis that says 3.
It's a good start to a conversation, I'd say.
It's confusing, though, because she's just not, she's not consistent with me around Will in my contact. And
I never really cared about the... Well, I mean, I cared, but like how my name is written out, like I never really cared about the third, really, until my son was born, because he's the fourth. So now I do that. I originally put it on my PDGA thinking that there would be like 1,000 other Will Davises out there. But up until like a year ago, I was still the only Will Davis. So,
whoa.
Wow.
Didn't need to.
And now there's Will Davis. Now there's others.
Yeah. So the third actually like separates me now. For the first
there we
time.
Go.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, welcome along. Also, for all of you who aren't aware, 90% of the content that you see on social media has been across the desk or computer of Mr. Davis. He edits this podcast. He runs the Instagram account. He started the Instagram account. We're going to get all into it. But
just he's a rock
those,
star.
For those who don't realize, I'm sure all the OGs listening are well aware. OGs of the Facebook groups. We have, what I would argue that we have, and we come from sort of a, you guys being sponsored by Discmania and me being a fan, there's really good collector Facebook groups for Discmania. And moving to MVP now, I feel no different, if not like more even. Like the strength of those two big Facebook groups is really, really impressive. And I mean, it's frequented by staff of MVP, including Will, including Eric and Donnie, and boy, who am I missing that are also, I mean, there's constant
Eric. Like,
that's what I said. I said Eric and Donnie.
I wasn't listening.
Nice, thanks.
Yeah, Eric moderates those pages.
Right.
So he's all up in there for sure. But yeah, the collector market and just like the diehard fanship has been around like since the beginning. And it's gotten a lot bigger. And yeah, the amount of discs that have existed and are going out of production, they're like, you know, oddball stamps, stuff like that. Like, how old are you? 2010, so almost 16 years now. Like, comparatively to the other brands, it doesn't seem that long, but there's a good amount out there. A lot to be desired for sure.
16 years.
I mean, I would.
Wild.
I think, too, the companies put a lot of deliberate, like, kind of effort into those groups as well, which I think adds to their strength. Like, I think there's a lot of like active interest in kind of the strength and community in those groups from MVP throughout the entire like lifespan of the company.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, even like Brad, Chad, and Andrew are on there, not mm-hmm. to, you know, babysit or anything, but like they, no. That's like a huge source of customer and fan feedback, so they keep a pretty good eye on that stuff too. And yeah, I mean, they just love what they do, and they always are striving to be better. You know, the whole, where the whole leading edge thing comes from. So it's a fun spot.
When did you first start playing disc golf, and how did you find it? I mean, I know you're from a hotbed, so there's lots of courses.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Greenville, North Carolina. And then I've lived in Durham the past 11 years, something like that, which is like, you know, Raleigh, Durham, Triangle area. So lots of courses.
I just visited for like my first time ever, pretty much.
You did?
Yeah, I played one course.
Did you play the Evolve?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
How do I say it? I've heard so many different ways.
I think that's still up for debate.
Diavolo, Diavolo.
I said Diavolo, but it's probably wrong. It's Italian, so.
It was really fantastic.
Yeah.
Very beautiful. Cool. Like, it's really especially great with me and Maria because I can play the longs and she can play the shorts, and we can still pretty much like walk together the same course. It's not like totally different, but
yeah, it's a great course.
And I'll always come up to the short tee and throw a couple ace runs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great.
Yeah, Masters, Tim Selinski was there last year.
All the raps.
Sarah won. Shout out.
Could it be Pro Tour caliber?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With some work?
I think so. Yeah.
For sure. You could pick. Because how many holes is it? 22?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could totally. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And it would be a Pro Tour that Simon would play every year. Because you could make it. It would be. You could make that course like a W.R. Jackson, but like not annoying. Like fun.
It's have you heard W.R. Like, Jackson's not annoying?
Well, I know. But it wasn't. It was starting to. They were messing with things. They took away the little, what was it called? Turkey Gulch. Those little three par threes that used to be in a row.
Oh, yeah.
6 years ago.
Diavolo.
Mm-hmm. It used to be top 10 course in the world. It's still like top 20, I think.
Yeah, probably so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's fairly new too. So I didn't start there. I think the first time I ever played was at Meadowbrook in Greenville. Which actually Paul Kranz is playing those courses this weekend for Depp Cup, which is an A tier. They get some pro overflow.
Down east.
Down East Players Cup. Yeah, Depp Cup is what they call it. But yeah, Meadowbrook's an awesome course. I started playing it, like I played in college kind of casually. And then once I got married and we moved to the Triangle area, my wife and I both just got, you know, kind of random jobs. And then like I ended up getting off at 4 and she got off at like 7. So we had a little, still have a boxer. She's not a puppy anymore. She's like 2 then. So we were just looking for stuff to like go out and do. I don't know, start playing more. And then, yeah, I got the bug. I guess that was 2014. And then, yeah, so, you know, exploring discs and all that stuff. And I had like a classic Cobra that I threw for everything. And I wanted to like drive past 200 feet without it turning and rolling. So I think, yeah, it was, it played again. I'm a big Duke basketball fan. That's, I think everyone knows that within a few minutes of meeting me. So I saw this like Duke blue disc with a black rim. And there weren't many of those on the shelf. There's like a couple drivers, maybe 2 or 3 mids and some putters. And I was like, oh, I'm getting that one. It was ended up being the first run of Volt and it's still in my bag. I got that. And then, yeah, playing a couple times. I'd started.
What year was that?
2014.
Wow. Cool.
I'd started working for a creative marketing agency around that time. So I went to go tag MVP on Instagram, you know, show off new discs or whatever, and then couldn't find one. So made the handle at MVP Disc Sports and messaged Brad and Chad and said, hey, pay me, you know, $1 million. I'm just kidding. I just told them like, you know, I can run this as a fan site for now, or, you know, just let me know what you want to do with it. And it took them a little while to reply, but I'd like posted, you know, just photos and stuff on there. Brad ended up direct messaging me and saying like, hey, thanks for doing that. If you can keep doing that, we'll put you on the tester team and, you know, send you the new releases and stuff like that. So my first tester disc was a Soft Neutron Envy, which is also still in my bag. So
how fast was that, like from 2014? Like when did...
It was like probably 3 months or so.
Within you starting to play?
Yeah, like playing more than once a year, basically. Or like once every couple months.
That's cool.
Yeah, because then I'd started kind of playing like every day and like joining the local scene clubs. And yeah, I got the bug that everybody gets.
Yeah, and you got like direct access to a pretty cool way to create media and get cool discs.
Yeah, and I think that was back when Brad and Chad were still like in the barn, and I think they just had Zam doing their branding and stuff like that. So I don't even know if they had like
in the barn. What does that mean?
They started like in a barn. It's kind of like this, like except with not a cool apartment above it, but the downstairs setup and everything, like that was their warehouse. That was their shipping facility. Where they took
Is that where they made the discs too?
No. So they used to make the discs at their dad's plastic
factory, which
is Maple Valley Plastics. And then eventually brought everything in-house.
Does Maple Valley Plastics still make other plastics? Like, I'm sure they made other plastics that weren't discs.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know their business. I would assume they're still going, but I believe, and we can fact check this later, but I believe primarily they make stuff for like car parts and stuff like that, because, you know, it's an hour or two outside of Detroit. So a lot of like, I remember seeing like the little plastic covers that like go over seat belts and stuff. Okay. So yeah, that was their dad's plastic factory. And yeah, they took out a little, or I guess they paid him back for the mold and with the first run Ion, and it's been going at it ever since.
Does MVP stand for Maple Valley Plastics? Because I talked to Andrew about this and it does, but it kind of doesn't anymore. Like, Brad and Chad don't necessarily identify the brand as Maple Valley Plastics. It's more of like paying homage to their dad, potentially.
That's my understanding too. I think Brad essentially said that same thing. Like, it's a, you know, an homage to where we started, but we're not Maple Valley Plastics. We're MVP Disc Sports.
Most valuable plastic.
So you've been doing MVP stuff for over a decade.
Yeah, in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, I continue to work at creative marketing agencies since 2022. And then I was just kind of tired of it. It was super long hours and you're kind of never off. And so I just started, I did a little bit of like freelance social and graphic type work. And then I ended up getting a job with the Pro Tour. And I was like about ready to take that. I was a social position. And then Andrew came on as the marketing director. And we've always like been close because he was out on the road before that. And then he would send me, you know, a bunch of videos. He was essentially like kind of what Joey's been doing for us this year, our boots on the ground per se. And then he got the marketing director position. Like I said, we were super tight, and he was very passionate about wanting me to stick around. And I mean, Andrew is solid gold of a person. So I was happy to, you know, you don't want to turn anybody down, obviously, but I was happy to take Andrew up on that offer. And so, yeah, I've been like full-time W-2 with MVP for, I guess, going on 3.5 years, something like that. But yeah, contracted or content creating, yeah, over a decade. Kind of crazy.
Pretty nuts.
Before that, can you tell us a little bit about your band days and...
Yeah.
And how did that play into disc golf? Was there overlap in those time periods, or was it kind of swap one for the other?
There was a little overlap and a little bit of hiatus, I guess. So if you would have asked me when I was a teenager, like what I wanted to do, it was playing drums on tour, you know, sign a record deal and living that life. Like I was never really drawn to like huge, like Foo Fighters, big band stuff, but I love like the small, like 2000 cap venue, intimate shows. And growing up going to those concerts, like that's just what I wanted to do. So I was in several bands when I was 18 to 22 or whatever. And then took a little break and got a job, you know, got married, got a job. And then around that time I started playing disc golf. The passion for music was still there, obviously. Like I still haven't really stopped making it, but yeah, I got asked to be in a band of my friends. He was actually a drummer at the time, and then I actually played guitar and sang in another band, and then he started a band where he played and sang and played guitar, and then I played drums. And then that band ended up doing fairly well, and you know, signed a small little record deal, and I got to tour a good bit and play Warped Tour, and yeah, check off a lot of like bucket list stuff. And yeah, I guess there's some overlap. Mm-hmm. We recorded all of our stuff in Crown Point, Indiana, which is like a Chicago suburb. And drums, you know, you always do first in an album. And so like I finished the drums, and then I, you know, I had my bag, so I looked up courses and stuff, and like Women Lake was like 5 minutes away.
World, yeah. Championships,
yeah.
Wow. Venue.
And so we're there for like 2 weeks, and so I would do the drums, like have a little guitar input or whatever, and then be like, okay, vocals, I don't have to do vocals, so I'm out. And I got to play all four courses at Linn Lake every time we'd go up there to record.
Wow. For our listeners, what was the name of your band?
That band's name was Summer Wars.
Summer Wars.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of music were you guys playing?
Pop punk.
Pop.
Yeah. We were all Blink-182 driven, inspired, that kind of thing. I actually saw Blink-182 with the guitarist of that band a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was telling Eagle about it.
But, and me.
Yeah, me and Will had a pretty good music conversation at Steak Night at the Lazotte House.
Yeah, and there was some good guitaring at the Lazotte House that night.
And for sure.
I didn't know this, but all those samples of the intros you sent us and our current intro is made by you.
Yes.
That's crazy. I did not know that.
Yeah, though I don't know. I'm not a big fan of like AI music. Really, AI in all senses has a place sometimes, but like, yeah, y'all were like kind of specific about what you wanted, what kind of sound. And then I was like, well, let me try. And if not, then maybe we can find something that works. And yeah, y'all ended up liking it. But yeah, I guess I never really was like, hey, I recorded this. So,
no, I love it.
Yeah. The beginning
gives
of
it personality.
The beginning of it is an actual pepper grinder. And then, yeah, I just had my kick drum in there, and then I think I shook the salt shaker. So it's not very genuine to the crushed pepper, but there's a salt shaker.
Crushed.
I can probably shake it like a salt shaker.
Probably pull it up on my computer maybe and show y'all, but not while the audio track's running currently.
I'm curious, how much time does it take to edit one of our podcasts and cut out all the things that shouldn't be said?
I've gotten it down to a pretty good science, I think, these days. Of course, I say that, and then there's something that I think in the Maple Hill episode, I listened to it quick, published it, and then something like Simon had to take a phone call or something in the middle of it. And I guess I missed that somehow. So
that was in it? Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, it's just your tree guy.
I know.
Yeah, I'm not perfect. Not perfect at it, but...
And sometimes we can make your job a little bit harder, like if we are recording and, for example, I think it was one of the last episodes, I was mm-hmm. remote and Simon and Joey were still at Simon's house and they were in the same room and
Eagle was on speakerphone.
I was on speakerphones, yes, and not on headphones.
Simon didn't
and it
want
just
created the Bluetooth headphones.
It sounds like it is a slight disaster.
Yeah. So yeah, that would be on the longer end of things. I think that was probably like 2-3 hours of going in there and just chopping out the echoes of Eagle and Joe.
You did a great job because I had no idea.
Thank you. Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, it happens. It's fine. I that's what I really like about working with y'all three is like, you like to have a silly goose time, and it's laid back. Sometimes like mishaps like that happen, and it kind of just adds to the character of the podcast, in my opinion.
We'll try to be better. 2-3 hours, that's a long time to be editing something that is less than said amount of time.
I'm curious what kind of tour you were on. Was it like a national tour, like around the country, and was it by like a one of those stereotypical like tour buses for like a band that they have, or did you fly or did you drive? Or
yeah, we drove 16 passenger van. Yeah,
okay.
Our trick for the first little bit was just to rent one because you could do unlimited miles, and then for a week or two stint we'd just rent the van and instead of, you know, buying a $12,000 one or whatever. And then, yeah, I was in a band at 1.2 that we had like a little like city bus, like we called it a short bus, but yeah, it was like a city bus and it had a handicap ramp. So like all the amps and stuff was kind of nice. You just like put it on the handicap.
Ramp. So you brought all your own gear, set everything up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every now and then we
like crew with you or was
yeah, we
just...
bring some people on the road for merch and like, you know, as content got more and more important to have as part of like your daily.
What years was this?
Let's see, 2015 to 19, I think, was like the heavy 20 wow. days. But yeah, my first show with that band actually was South by Southwest in Austin, and it was like kind of a oh my gosh, like this is how it feels. Like we just drove 16 hours and now we play. And like
what year?
15 or 16, I'd have to look.
That was South by Southwest one of those years.
Yeah.
Maybe I saw you without knowing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that could be. That reminds me too. I don't know. I think I've told you and Eagle both, but back to the overlap, not the overlap of music really, but like marketing agency and you guys. USDGC, I think it was either 2015 or 16. The agency I was working for did a spot for Dude Clothing.
I'll never forget this.
Yeah. And I helped like write and film that whole, you know, I think it was for a jacket or something like that.
I think it was hats.
Yeah. Yeah. Hats.
All the Dude players had their like own signature piece of clothing.
Yeah.
They did like a brief little clip for Instagram.
Yeah. It was actually an ad like that they wanted to use on YouTube and their website, but I think it did get used on social too. I think these days it would be like a commercial spot on DGN or whatever, but you two were both there and I mic'd both of you guys up. You probably don't remember much because that was forever ago and you're always doing stuff on camera, but that was the first time I met you both.
Simon offer didn't, MVP at all.
Simon didn't make the commercial because he was eating a granola bar.
I was eating during,
a granola bar.
Yeah. So you're just kind of like chewing and then saying, like, I think you only had to say thanks, dude, or something like that. But you're like, thanks, dude. So
I would love to see that.
Yeah, Eagles in it. Another thing we can dig up. And
you must have that on your computer.
No, not this one. I actually
some computer.
I hit up Tim Robbins, the guy who started and still runs that agency. And yeah, he actually had a disc golf store too. So that was like one of the ways I got kind of pushed in this direction. But yeah, I reached out about it because I saw him at the Blink 182 concert. And then that reminded me, I was like, I wonder if he still has those like raw files.
You just randomly saw him at the Blink 182 concert.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was weird. Yeah, everything was like 10 years ago. Like I said, I went with the guitarist of my old band, and then I saw Tim from the audience I worked at too, and then watching Blink 182. So it felt like I entered a time capsule for a second.
Yeah.
Serendipity.
Yeah.
So have you signed stuff for fans and stuff? Did you guys have like a following at all?
Yeah. I mean, not what you're used to. There was never a Simon line or an Eagle.
No, but like what I'm used to.
But you've signed some stuff.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
what I'm used to.
Some stuff.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Cause I don't have a line, but I have like one out of every, there's like two people a day who will be like, come up to me, and they're really sweet and they're really nice. And yeah, it's like just enough that it's like cool, but it's not like anything overwhelming.
I've signed a lot of people's Joey Tamale discs.
Signing one of them yesterday,
and they're pumped about it because they get your signature, Simon's signature, my signature. It's like, I have the Crush Pepper disc. I'm so
I've
pumped.
So many people request that
signings. Oh yeah,
it's always cool. Like people come up and say that they love the podcast.
I've got some really funny, whatever, sequels for my stamp. This is the last year I'm going to do it. I think I might order one more, like, allotment of them.
You're going to revamp the logo?
I'm just going to make a new stamp. Okay. I'm going to, like, my logo is going to stay the same, but I'm, like, my next run of discs was inspired, I think, by Andrew Johns, and I think we're going to do Ghost Pepper, and I think we have a pretty good concept for that. So, but yeah, I definitely.
I want to know, I've asked Simon this before, and I actually want to hear that story again from Simon, but what is like the weirdest thing a fan has asked y'all to sign?
I signed some weird stuff literally last week where I'm like, why? I don't think I've ever signed this before. What was it? My brain.
I signed, I think the weirdest thing I signed was a lawnmower.
That's weird.
Some people, was it at Worlds, I think, that there was a lawnmower at Tampere or some other European event this year where we signed the lawnmower?
PCS?
I can't remember. I just remember.
It's not
it.
The tractor. No.
No, not the tractor. It was a lawnmower. It was one of the guys who maintains the course. Like, that's a great thing to have signed. If you're like one of the mowers of a tour course, have it signed by all the pros who come through.
This happened, I think, this year or last year. I technically could have got stroked because littering is not allowed by the PDGA, but I had a jerky stick and the wrapper fell out of my bag and a kid picked it up. And after the round, I went to the signing tent and he says, can you sign this? And it was the wrapper of my used jerky.
That's good.
And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, thank you for picking up my trash.
Didn't you guys have like a crazy signing session in Milwaukee or something where the people got tattoos of your signatures or something like that?
Yeah, our
that's happened multiple times.
That's probably the craziest thing that has happened signature related.
So you signed somebody's
arm and they got it tattooed.
Wow. How do you feel about that?
A little scared.
I remember asking, like, are you sure you want to do this? There was one guy, I think.
Did you practice your signature at all?
Wait, what do you mean? Before signing the arm?
Yeah.
No, what I went slower than normal to like make sure it looks not horrible.
I think I kind of messed mine up a little bit.
It's hard to sign skin.
Oh my gosh. One guy this year had like a full arm of signatures. He's like, I'm going to get a sleeve. I'm going. There's like a trace over it.
Wow. What prompted that question for me was, I think it was last year at Worlds, where Simon signed like a loaf of bread. And I asked him, what's the weirdest thing you've ever signed? And he was, I think we were at Waffle House or something. He was eating. He just like took a like an insightful bite and like looked up. And like 20 seconds later was like, probably the bread.
The bread.
Cracked me up.
Some parents have asked me to sign their child, like a baby, and I didn't do it. I felt uncomfortable. A toddler, like a younger child, I think I've signed their arm a few times. One man in Finland who was a bit intoxicated. I was doing a McBeast challenge that UC was organizing, and this man wanted me to sign his face, and UC didn't let me do it.
I remember one time after a super, super good final round at a like local Minnesota A tier or B tier, the Twin Town Throwdown, I finished like fifth, maybe. I shot like 10.50 the final round, 10.40. And I was just, you know, kind of with that ADHD excitement mode where I was, you know, a little loose without needing anything to be loose on. And Raven Klein was there selling her discs, and I was just like, here, sign right across my chest. And she did. It's a huge signature right across my stomach.
Did you get tattooed?
Nope. But I have a picture of it.
All right, I have a question to Will.
Let's hear it.
So you're pretty good at making things look professional. You've done my YouTube channel artwork for, I mean, 3 years now since I've been on MVP. You've done my profile pictures. Like anything you ever see from MVP on Instagram that looks like professional and clean. I think most everything probably you've done, or most of the graphics, when we share like top finishers or pre-tournament who's in the event. And
yes,
so I don't know if this question makes sense, but disc golf and the pro tour, what is like a thing you think they do really well, and what do you think is really cool about the sport and the tour, and what do you think is lacking and you think could be picked up and is overlooked a bit as something like, man, this could be way better than it is?
Is this like creatively speaking?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good question. I think they do a lot well. And like anybody in the creative space, especially for disc golf, it's fairly new. At least the size and following of it is new. So I think it's a constant place of improvement for everyone. What you got?
Oh, that's the picture of me getting my chest signed by Raven.
Nice. I can make that the cover photo. God. Maybe not.
It's back
on. But yeah, the Pro Tour, I think they've gotten a lot better about like player focused kind of fun stuff. The off season content and the side, using Jomez to like hone in on the creative space, I think is kind of my favorite thing that they've done. Cause that was a big question mark when they absorbed Jomez, was like, how are they still gonna differentiate and make cool stuff? But like that video of y'all in Detroit, that was really fun. And I think super entertaining. So I think they're innovative in that way. I think a lot of their stuff is like templates, which it kind of has to be. And, you know, just, I think what I would like to see the Pro Tour do better in that realm, it's no slight to them because it's kind of impossible to to do it. But like, instead of like screen recording the coverage stuff for highlights, I think I would like to see them like improve the quality of that, like maybe a different angle with that A-cam that they use a lot for the close-up shots. You can see like on coverage, sometimes they're like, that camera looks a lot clearer. And that's the one, I think he has the same lenses as Joey and I have. But like at the same time, no slight to them, because like I would like to do that too, you know? But it's hard to have like all those cameras in one spot. But yeah, thank you for the kind words. I'm glad you like the graphics.
I think somehow you've never made anything I didn't like. That's rare.
That means a lot. It means a lot. I know
I'm a very harsh critic.
I think you're very aware of that. And I don't know. I mean, they say like the best type of editor is the one who like knows their client the best and like knows how to conform and doesn't like take over with their style no matter what. It's like reading the people they're working for and adapting. And I think that you take your job very seriously too. So
I do. Yeah. Thank you. I guess I've just always liked to create something that people respond to or get excited about, whether it's music or, you know, graphics. But yeah, the graphic design is one thing I've like, I'd be embarrassed to show y'all, like the early days of how just awful it is.
I'm very, very scared right now to like go down that rabbit hole at like and fail. And so I'm going to like talk to you this off season about like improving my graphic stuff this off season. Cause like, even like just to getting to where I've gotten editing wise this year, like even what I sent you, like, I did like a majority of whatever Silva reel that was posted, like yesterday with her interview. Like I edited that for the first time. Usually I like send it to Will, but Will played a tournament, on Friday. And so but also I just wanted to do it cause he had sent me the template to do it. And, so I'm,
you're great.
I want to like go down that more, but I'm impressed with like kind of where you've gotten your graphic skills to. And it's obvious that like it had to start.
Yeah.
That's somewhere embarrassing.
It does. There's a lot of good inspiration out there.
I mean, you guys don't have iPhone 5 filmed iMovie edited with graphic YouTube videos out there. I do. I have 13 of the most embarrassing Joey videos of all time.
I have a few of those.
Living on,
if you go
on
way
YouTube,
back in the archive.
But see, for me, you don't even have to do that. It's literally the only videos I've ever posted.
Joey vlogs.
I've watched them. I think they were awesome.
Bolivia.
It's a totally different time in my life, completely. But it's cool that they're there. I'm glad it happened.
Were you like 14 or 15?
No, I was 18.
Oh.
I was right. It was right before I got hired by the Pro Tour, literally.
Sounds like a rabbit hole. I'd like to.
It was my gap year after high school. I didn't want to go to college. And so I was going to go to Bolivia for 9 months. And I got really homesick. But also, my friend Craig Stenzel got a gig with the Pro Tour and he needed people. And so I got hired and cut my trip short and went and worked for the Pro Tour. And the rest is history. But can I say a hot take? Because I was listening to Will's take about what he wishes the Pro Tour would do better. Yes. This is my hot take. I
spicy
wish
take.
That creatively the Pro Tour would focus less on, or they would broaden their athlete focus in the content world. Because right now, I think that the top 10 or even 5 FPO and the top 15 MPO players on tour right now are extremely oversaturated with content, and not only like on the fan side of watching, but also like on the athlete side of like what they're being committed to. Like the difference between what Simon and Calvin and Eagle, and not even Eagle, like in the last year or two, like, but like let's say like the difference between Paul Macbeth versus Paul Kranz in the amount of opportunities for content, for tournaments, for match play, feature cards, all-star events, press conferences, that they are given is insanely different, and they're both in the Tour Championship. And I think that it would benefit not only the players who are smaller, who need the content and need those opportunities, not only to grow their brand, but sometimes literally to survive out there. It would help those players, but it would also like decrease the amount that is expected of top players, and give them more time to actually focus on competing instead of like having five things to do every week when they show up. That's my hot take. I don't know. Agree or disagree?
I think you're always going to have the top players are always going to be the busiest, but I do see what you're saying.
I think it's like spread, if you look at
spreading
golf
out
tennis,
a little bit. Oh, I think of Full Swing. I don't remember the guy's name, but it just stuck out my head. It's like they did a showcase on like the 76th ranked player.
Yeah, Joel Damon.
Yeah,
Damon.
Exactly.
Yeah, Joel Damon's great. No, the PGA.
And it gives a whole another perspective too.
PGA does a really good job of showcasing a lot of their players. Now, what's cool about golf too is that the big name brands in golf nowadays are like more widely dispersed through the top 50 players or 75 players in the world than you would expect. Like, you would, if you like picked out the 15 most popular golfers in the world and then put their world rankings next to their like popularity ranking, like you'd be surprised. If it's disc golfers, it's like the top 15, the top 15. Like, it's not, there's not like ridiculously popular disc golfers.
Top 15 or like once was a top 15 too.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But I just think that it would be beneficial. And I think it starts with feature cards. I think it starts with this match play opportunities. Those are like two big things, in my opinion.
Jomez did it. I don't. Do they still do the player profiles like they used to?
Because
those were sick. Those were really cool.
Those were really cool. I used to shoot and edit those player profiles back when I worked for Jomez for 2 years. Those were fun.
Those were really good brand building opportunities.
I don't know why I'm thinking of it, but I am thinking of it right now. I did a profile piece on Nick Carl when he made lead card at Waco. And it was really great. And we are here actually at a Nick Carl related property.
I think Nick lived in this apartment for a couple of years.
Sure he did.
Oh yeah.
The greats have lived in this apartment.
Yeah, we are in Goode, Virginia, on the Goliath Disc Golf Course property here, formerly owned by one Paul Macbeth and pretty much developed by that man. There are 18 tee pads and 18 tee signs and 18 Chainstar Pros out here in these woods.
It's not on U-Disc.
It is on U-Disc. You have to search it.
It doesn't pop up on the map, though.
You have to search it. It's a search. There's that's a function on U-Disc. There are courses.
There's search only U-Disc courses.
It's called hidden. Yeah. It's hidden. Ooh. You have to search it. If you search the exact name, it'll pop up. Yeah. So we're above the garage. The Macbeths lived here, I think, right after they got married. Was it even before they got married? I don't know. You guys were here in the early days.
Is that Paul Macbeth's Dynamic Disc Open trophy?
Very possible.
I think it is.
He decided to leave one for the fans.
Yeah, I think that's the 2020 Dynamic Disc Open, the one that was on CBS. Yes. That is it. But they lived here. When did you visit, Eagle? You were here with Jeff Korns before. You said before this garage was even built.
Yes, 2018, we were coming down the coast, and I remember our previous agent that Paul and I shared, Sam Hassel. This was when Paul was thinking about switching from Innova to Discraft. And I remember spending a few days here in Lynchburg, and we all went to play it against sports, and Paul was like going through used discs and grabbing some like random beat up Discraft just to get a feel for it, because like,
did he have anything out here in the woods?
No, it was actually when Hannah Macbeth's dad was working slash helping Paul out, clearing out fairways for the course that we're at, the Goliath. 2018.
When were you here?
I couldn't tell you. 2019, maybe, I guess. And this place was just brand new. And some fairways had been cleared, and Paul was still course designing, and we toured the course. He asked me for input and thoughts. And that's when it really started. Wait, or was this already pandemic?
It could have been COVID, but it could have been right before.
I don't remember. I was really into my YouTube channel, so I was trying to do as much as possible. And
I think it might have been winter of
the having Paul on the channel is like the greatest accomplishment.
That's when you did that bag swap.
Oh, yeah.
We filmed the bag swap, and we also filmed the video where I tell him what line to throw, and he tells me what line to throw. So I told him like Simon lines, and he told me like the smart lines. That video has like 600,000 views or something, I think.
Didn't you also film that little bit where it was like he was like running in the treadmill or something in the garage?
Yeah, that was down here in the garage. Because we had the famous poster in the Discmania RV, which was actually written by Sam Ferentz but signed as Paul Macbeth, was "When you are sleeping, I'm practicing." Because that was Paul's whole thing 10 years ago, is that he practices more and better than anyone, which was probably true. And it was like 1 a.m. here, and Paul's just on the treadmill running laps. 1 a.m.
So that wasn't staged?
It was not technically staged, but who goes running at 1 a.m. on a freaking treadmill in their basement? Not a normal person.
Well, he has trouble sleeping. He does. I know him well enough. He has trouble sleeping.
He's got good greatness on the mind.
Trust people who have no trouble sleeping.
So you don't trust Paul Macbeth?
He has trouble sleeping, I thought.
You heard it here first. Paul Macbeth is not trusted by Simon Lizotte.
No, Simon trusts
name of the episode.
People who Simon trusts people who lose sleep. He doesn't trust.
Oh, I got it
good
wrong.
Good night of sleep.
Yeah, I don't trust people who have no trouble sleeping.
Oh, you definitely don't trust me.
You have no trouble sleeping.
Not often.
I have
to pee when I sleep.
I have trouble sleeping recently because I don't have my Santa Cruz Paleo
magnesium glycinate.
Yeah, I need to get some more, but I haven't had it for like 2 weeks, and I've noticed like significant annoyances falling asleep.
Placebo. How do you sleep, Will?
It's not placebo.
Not placebo.
I mean, like you, I'm a father of two.
Oh, yeah.
And
doesn't help.
Similar, close enough in ages where I think our sleep right now is in a kind of a weird spot. Like, I feel like, at least for me, I sleep a lot harder now than I used to, because I feel like it's my body saying, like, hey, if you don't sleep right now, you're going to be miserable tomorrow because these boys are going to wear you out, kind of thing. So I feel like I sleep really well, but not as long as I would like.
I trust you.
Yeah. But our 6-year-old comes in our room, like, you know, a decent amount, and that disrupts the hard sleep.
You sleep in the same room with both of your children.
Yes, that's parenting method we chose.
That is my son's dream.
It's crazy that like when you guys go to bed, it's like 8:45, maybe 8:30. It's like you can't leave that room again.
I sometimes do.
But maybe not till like they're passed out. But I just remember every night at Maple Hill, it'd be like 8:30. I'd be like, all right, I guess I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, just being around kids all day just wears you out. Yeah. And doing it tired is 10 times harder than doing it not tired. So you just got to go to bed early. Get the hours in. Every hour, Dustin always said this year to me, because Dustin is a lot about health and routines. And he says every hour you sleep before midnight is worth triple of the hours after.
He's right.
Yeah.
That's what I have to tell Ritana all the time.
Speaking of Dustin, I wanted to congratulate you on a year of filming. I think you really, like, I don't want to sort of, look, there's two ways you can look at a funeral, and I think I want to celebrate what happened. And what happened is that you created an insane amount of content for the diehard Lizotte fans, and they got an absolute treat for an entire disc golf season. And I am extremely impressed by your commitment to the process of it. And you have created a permanent kind of playlist of amazing videos that will always exist there on your channel. And you don't have to add your thoughts, but you're welcome to if you want to.
Yeah, I'm very glad we did it, and I'm very glad it's over.
Yeah. But shout out to you for doing it, and shout out to Dustin for all the amazing work. It was a fantastic collaboration, and I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I look at it as like when two artists come in and collaborate on an album, and they make a bunch of really great tracks, and it was a great like moment in time, and I think you should both be really proud of it, and continue on and do other great things now, and always look back on it like that, because I know that when I have kids at some point, when they're old enough, I am going to show them all of those videos. Like, without a doubt, we are going to go through and watch all those videos. And it was like absolutely a season to remember with our group. And I already know that it probably won't quite ever look like that again. And that's why I'm happy that it happened.
Yeah, me too.
It's going to be, you can get very nostalgic looking back.
And now we can remember.
Like, those were the good old days.
But we can really remember it now with its entirety. I just like, and I mean, you guys both have that for even further. But this was like a real core documentation of what a tour looks like.
Yeah. I mean, just from an outside perspective, that looked like a grind. I mean, I was there for, I don't know, a third of it maybe.
Yeah.
And saw the work behind it. And I know there was the other two thirds that I didn't see. I mean, yeah, hats off. That is, that's an accomplishment. Like, I think going back to the dad thing and sleep and rest. And then, you know, even when you're away from your kids, you're still staying up and getting that done just because you committed to it. And yeah, I do think it is super special for the fans to, like, from my point of view, I don't think anything's been done like that before, at least not to that extent.
Not even close. And,
well, actually, I on the course yesterday here and at Ivy Hill, I ran into one and only John Macbeth.
Me too.
Who I mean, we used to be friends, like good friends back in the day when he was still touring with Paul, like 2015, 16-ish that time. And they were doing McBeast Diaries.
Yeah, McBeast
which were
Diaries.
Like more like weekly tournament recaps and like some off the course stuff.
I remember that.
I mean, like diary style, kind of like we do the vlogs this year. We did it probably a bit more high level and a bit more
polished.
Well, that was the most professional,
yeah, and
player
we did
content
half season
that's ever
with
been made.
Videos, so it was definitely on a different level of grind.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go back and watch some McBeast Diaries to like remember what that was like, because I mean, obviously the idea.
Did he go to Europe too?
Huh?
Didn't they do McBeast Diaries in Europe?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yeah, John was on the full swing.
I know. I saw him yesterday with his
pregnant wife.
Pregnant wife. Okay.
That's unbelievable.
Yep. And Pablo, it was his birthday
Mama
last
Macbeth.
Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mama Macbeth, I got to meet her for the first time. But baby P turned 2 years old last weekend at USDGC, so we got him a balloon. And Maria was really concerned that he wasn't going to like it because I didn't fill it enough on purpose with helium so that it would float away. I filled it just enough that it would kind of be like a really fun, like kind of like bouncing toy that would like slowly come back. And it was exactly how I had hoped. It was perfect. He was completely enamored with it. Just like he went absolutely berserk. And we kind of had to watch, like all three of us had to watch him because it was right near 18 and it is literally not a single flat spot on that course. Like it is so hilly. So he was just running, looking up at this balloon, like just falling every chance he got. So we were there to catch him, but it was,
A balloon is better than 99% of any $50 toy that has all the bells and whistles you can ever imagine. Just one balloon, it will entertain for days.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I said the wrong name of the cartoon on the... I said Bluey, and John Macbeth was right there, and he was like, dude, that's Paw Patrol. What are you talking about? And I was just like, you don't even have a kid yet. How did you... He's like, I'm an uncle. Come on.
Shout out Bluey.
Yeah, okay.
Shout out Paw Patrol.
Shout out John Macbeth.
When you came... When Simon came to MVP and signed, I drove up from North Carolina, and... Me and him and Andrew had like rooms beside each other at the hotel. And I went downstairs and I heard like the Bluey theme song in a room. And I was like, is that Simon's room? Is he like talking to him or something? But Simon was downstairs and I was like, did you have Bluey on in your room? And you were like, Bluey? And I was like, yeah, Bluey, the show. And you were like, I don't know what that is. And I was like, oh. But now you know. No.
Yeah, my son was like less than a year old then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we weren't into the TV zone yet.
Yeah.
What's your favorite kid show now?
Whichever one hypnotizes them the most. Miss Rachel has been incredible. Both my kids know sign language because of Miss Rachel.
What?
It's incredible.
Really?
Like, Mia can't talk, but she does, like, sign language that means, like, more or again or...
That's awesome.
What?
A couple of different things, like, all done.
So I need to show my future children Miss Rachel?
I mean, it's very obviously debatable what TV does for a child's brain, and we are on the side that every now and then it's... I don't know.
I think the right development.
It's fine because parents sometimes need a break.
Yes.
And that break is more valuable than the damage the TV does.
Well, but also, like, I don't think that every TV program is doing damage, like, in a healthy dose. Like, Mr. Rogers.
It's debatable. People
Mr. Rogers. But you have to tell me that, like, Mr. Rogers or Miss Rachel, like, these educational, developmental TV shows are, like, harming a child. Like, I think unless they're glued to that show for 8 hours a day or more than maybe 5 hours, like I don't think you're harming.
Well, Louis C.K. put it best. He has many kids jokes on his stand-ups, of course, but if you put a kid in front of the TV, no matter what's on the TV, and you just turn the TV off without warning and watch your kids react to whatever is even on the TV. It doesn't even matter what's on. But you just turn the TV off and see how your kid reacts. That's probably a good sign on that it is not healthy for your child to be staring at a screen.
Yeah.
I agree. Have you watched Number Blocks at all or heard of it?
Nope.
It was new for me this past year, but like it's a show that exactly how it sounds, numbers and blocks, and they like, you know, merge and like make bigger numbers and stuff like that, and Ford loves it, and he started kindergarten, and like his teacher is like, Ford is like really ahead in math, and I'm like, he watches this number block show and he's doing like seven times tables and stuff like that, and I'm like, well, you know, if you want to watch an hour of television and you're doing really well in math, which I am terrible at, I don't know, I kind of endorse it, but it's the same time.
Yeah. You're going to watch a show, like, before you have the ability to speak for yourself as a baby, and you're giving me those noises that you want the TV on, like, I'm throwing some education in front of your face.
Yeah, I think kids don't really care either what they watch that much.
Especially if you start it, like, young enough, and you, like, tune them into that, and they don't know what else is out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a very dreaded look here at the scoreboard because it's the final day of the Tour Championship.
It's the final day of the season.
It's the final day of the season.
It's the last round of the year today.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, Holland Hanley is winning.
Oh, Paige.
Holland Hanley is winning. She's playing great right now. She's 5 down through 12. She has a 2-stroke lead on Paige and a 4-stroke lead on Silva. Silva is, but she's totally bounced back after a horrendous start.
But she's
4 over through 6. But she's going to start running out of holes here, and she's out of bounds. So, wow.
We shall see.
Final day of the season.
What a year it's been.
It has been a year, that's for sure.
It doesn't feel that long ago that we were all in Florida. We're getting ready for our first round of the year, actually.
In the pool.
I mean, it's doing this craziest grind of my life, but looking
who did
it, it doesn't feel that long ago that we were just in Florida.
I talked to someone who talked to you and said that you told them it was the hardest year of your life. The hardest season of your life.
I don't know if I used the word hardest. Maybe. Probably busiest.
Yeah.
Maybe hardest. I don't know. Yeah. I think it was. It was absolute mental.
I would mirror that sentiment.
I'm going to ask y'all what I ask Ford after school as a little icebreaker. What's your highs and lows?
Rosebud Thorn.
Usually his is for the day, but I'll ask y'all for the season. High and low.
The high? Hopefully today.
Honestly, big shout out to Eagle McMahon, though. I mean, would you say you're easily playing your best tournament of the season right now?
Not according to the ratings.
No, it is according to the ratings. Look, everybody else except for Eagle is like ratings are bad. Eagle's averaging almost 20 points above his rating right now.
I'd be in third place right now.
Is there a world Eagle that you have the highest event rating average right now?
Well, no. Isaac and Aaron are beating me right now.
Barely.
They'd be beating me by 2 strokes. So
they're averaging 10.53. Eagle's averaging 10.50.
Low key goal today is shoot a hot round and
technically win. I can see that.
That would be a cool little stat.
But
I had 0 starting strokes.
0 starting strokes and a like outside of 2 holes, very solid first round, and then an absolutely blistering 8 down at New London Tech, which. I think if you had told people in the beginning of the week there would be an 8 down, some people would take that as the hot round. And follow it up with another scorcher. I mean, your card was it 42 under for your group?
Yeah.
On the day out there, which was...
We definitely fed off of each other.
Isaac with 12, and then... Aaron?
Voice is too easy, let's be honest.
Was it? No. Who else was on your card? Isaac?
It actually is.
Paul,
it really isn't Levin. That hard. It's just like, if you're putting your shots
Luke
in the
Taylor
fairway,
with an
it's
8
really not that
and
bad.
Eagle with an 11.
But the fairways are very slim.
I think that Ivy Hill is the most wooded-feeling open course because of how tight the demanding like landing zones are. Like, it's not a wooded course in the sense that it's not wooded, but it's in the sense that you have to be so specific, and I found myself throwing like a lot of the discs that I usually throw in the woods just for like really straight shots and accuracy like to these really specific landing zones. Like, I didn't feel like I threw Ivy Hill like I throw most open golf courses.
I don't know what to say because I went OB 7 times yesterday, so.
I filmed your entire round.
Really?
Yeah, I was there the entire day.
So you saw half great shots and half absolutely diabolical shots.
I heard you say that like about 10 times too. How can I be so perfect half the time and the other time just so bad?
It really does make sense to me.
What was the... Oh, I'm trying to think which hole.
Wait, we need to answer Will's question first. Highs and lows.
Yeah.
Of the season?
Mm-hmm.
what was my low?
I haven't said my low yet.
Let's start with the negative.
I think my low of the season was my back injury. That's a very easy one. That's my low. And my high was... I don't know. It's a great question. I think maybe my high was my final round at the Crokul Open. Like shooting 1,000 rated round and like finally completing a tournament. That was probably one of my happiest days.
Nice.
There's been a lot of lows this year. Let's just put it that way. Blowing out my tire and just feeling kind of like lost out on the road. And thankfully I have an incredible significant other that kept me sane through it all. Happy birthday. It's her birthday today.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Atana.
Hey.
But yeah, there's, you try to be positive when it comes to social media, not like fully show like exactly what you're going through, but there was some freaking tough times this year. And the thing is they're all like self-induced, which is like the weird part of it. It's like with disc golf, it's, you're kind of suffering in silence a lot of the time because you see people throw bad shots and it can really mess with you. But at the end of the day, it's like you're kind of the only person who actually cares about your own game. And the person that I feel like actually does care is Ratana. So it's like, it's comforting in that regard. So that's my high, being with Ratana.
Love it. My high would probably be the Estonia trip. That was the first trip of the year, Dustin. I kind of let loose a little bit and kind of just stepped off this super intense grind that we had going all the way up to the year of trip. Plus, I got my first tournament ace in 8 years or something, so that was awesome.
Oh, that's a high for me.
My tournament ace?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Not my tournament ace.
Yeah, you got a... Which hole? When did you ace? Maple Hill? Yes.
14, Maple Hill.
13. Another high was probably throwing the Boca for the first time and seeing that they nailed it. That was awesome.
You know, Silva has two Bocas in her bag and an Aspect.
Yeah, I think she was throwing the Aspect surprisingly a lot.
Mm-hmm. She's throwing it.
I actually even saw yesterday throw a time lapse once.
Mm-hmm. She still has your time lapse from that practice round.
So I love it. Low, probably... calling Dustin after MVP Open and telling him that I want to do the last 2 weeks on my own.
Yeah.
The phone call was really hard for me. I hate
understandably
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think you also feel like that when you say you're going to do something, that what kind of a person are you if you don't commit to that thing that you said? Like, I don't know. I feel like that's the German European in you of just like, you are what you say you're going to do. And if you don't follow through, then like, how can you even look at yourself in the mirror? I don't know. I just remember talking to you like even halfway through the seasons about like burnout, and you were like debating if that phone call was going to happen sooner. And I kind of knew that it was no way it was going to happen sooner because you have too much honor for that.
Yeah. I feel like if you make a plan, especially if it's on contract level.
Totally.
Freaking do it.
Yep. So
and at the end of the day, it's not that freaking hard.
Yes.
The fact that we complain constantly is kind of weird anyway, but this is...
It's all about perspective.
How has it felt like doing the past two and a half weeks by yourself again?
Well...
Not really by himself last week.
Yeah, I was really happy round one at USDGC, and then started round two. Andrew followed me like literally 10 feet behind me every shot, basically. So I lost my being by myself basically after one round already.
And this week has been really nice. I think if I had a caddy this week, I would have gone really, really, really low into a spiral of misery. The classic. Because these courses, oh boy, do I not like them at all.
And you just feel like with a caddy, you can't say things that you want to say, or you can't, you can just like, you're, you
yeah,
have
and
to.
I kind of like talk to myself a little bit, but it's not that as fun to like complain to yourself as it is to complain to someone else. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't even get that deep. I just kind of like say, oh my God, how are you so bad? And then I just move on.
That's the tough thing about having caddies is like you, there's a part of you just, unless you're very comfortable with your caddy, you can't be yourself. And then that's going to be a hindrance when you're playing. Like that's a big reason why I virtually never have a caddy, is because I feel like if someone's carrying my bag, I can't be my authentic self.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think for some people it's helpful to have someone to vent to and kind of say whatever they need to say to, and that like helps them get out of it. And for others, it makes it a worse to have someone to complain to, because then you do it and you kind of,
then they think it's
into,
they think it's their fault.
Which, well, and then yeah, there's a bunch, a whole different dynamic with what can go on in your mind about pulling someone else down with you, and you're
and
not
you think
alone.
It's their fault.
And they think it's their fault, and then you feel bad for them, and then you don't want to be there for multiple reasons. Yeah. I have definitely learned this year that I am someone who cannot have a caddy ever.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I always thought Jeff Brick did a great job for you. Like,
I love Jeff. He does a great job, but I've also had miserable times on the bag with Jeff, and it's not his fault. It's all my fault. And I don't think there's anything he could do different or better. But I just feel much happier on my own. I have to say that. I've very much learned that.
So you don't want me to caddy for you? I'm just kidding.
I don't.
I'm just kidding.
Well, speaking of that, though, you do have to play in like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah. It's already 11. Holy cow.
When do you want... What's your out?
Probably in the next 5 to 10 minutes.
All right.
I'm curious about fantasy. I really am.
Oh, it's over.
It's over. We're going to... It'll end...
This tournament doesn't count?
No, and neither did USDGC. It doesn't count for points. You don't get points at USDGC.
Okay.
Like, I mean, and you don't. Like, for tour points, I mean. Like, so we don't do it either. All right. Jeremiah has been updating our spreadsheet, even though we haven't been talking about it as much every year, but we had quite the shuffle in the season standings. Just some absolute massive weeks from Mr. McMahon. And at the end of it all, in third place, we have Eagle.
I still lost.
11,770 points. Joey in second place at 11,911 points. And Simon Lizotte with an absolutely massive, massive week. You won it on the last week. You beat me by 300 points at MVP Open to win with 12,120 points. So you won.
That's what
by,
I hit for 53rd place, baby. This is my new high of the year, Will, right here at this moment.
It is.
Break it down for you. Holland Hanley contributed almost 25% of your team, your total points for the year, followed by, in second place, your teammate, Silva Saarinen. And then we have Ricky and Calvin and Evelina and Simon. You contributed a bunch of percentage still, 10.8%. So congrats on your win. You won fantasy.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
And shout out Jeremiah for keeping track of this. We're probably not going to do fantasy next year.
But it was great to do it.
It was great to do it. Maybe we'll have like a modified version of fantasy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind checking it once at the beginning and once twice throughout the season.
I feel like Simon did predict that at the beginning of the season. I think first episode, maybe, when y'all did that, he was like, you guys are toast. He actually willed it into existence. Or Simon did.
Shout out to the winning team. Ricky, Silva, Evelina, Calvin, Holland, and Simon. They won.
That sounds like a really good team.
Yeah, it was. And do we want to answer one email, or are we going to be done? That's your call.
You guys can also keep going.
Yeah.
We have Gyropalooza next week.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll be there.
Here we go.
Is it Gyropalooza?
From Jeff Thompson. Are the three of you coming, and do you know who else is coming? Gyropalooza. Let's just hype it up. Silva is going to be there. I think Germ is going to be there. I'm going to be there.
Trevin Crowe.
Will Davis.
Raven Newsome.
Yes, I'll be there.
Raven Newsome.
Andrew Johnson. Brad and Chad.
Ratana Meekum.
The entire squad.
I think it's actually going to be...
Paul Kranz is not going to be there.
It's going to be sick, right?
There's no way it can't be.
Can you give the listeners one little... snippet of could be there, like a little treat?
Oh, here's one I've got. We're gonna have the Polaroid out.
Oh, that's good.
Fans and players and anyone is allowed to take photos throughout the day, and the best 10 to 15 photos at the end of the whole event are gonna make an Instagram post. And they're going to be reviewed by me and Will. So, based on the quality of the Polaroid,
the wall in the offices of,
I think all of the photos. I think every photo is going to make a wall, but I think the best 15 are going to make an Instagram post as well.
Sweet.
So that's a challenge not only to the players but also to all of you golden ticket winners. How many are coming? Do you know that?
I don't want to say too much because, like, I haven't been involved in the planning, like the hardcore planning of it. Just what's social going to do? What are we going to, you know, post and stuff while we're there? But I think, I don't want to say the wrong number, but I would say twice the population of Marlette, maybe. No, I don't. I think
so
they
20 people.
No. I think we were originally planning for like 1,000. People to be there. I don't know if that many people are coming.
Andrew gave me a number. Should I say it?
Yeah. Say it and then cut it out if it's wrong.
Andrew said it's going to be like anywhere from 250 to 350 people.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes more sense to me.
Yeah. I guess they were overshooting it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something to look forward to. A little taste, since you guys were both there when you went and played D-Glow, right?
Yep.
So... the graphic team, honestly, everybody there's been killing it to like do kind of a overhaul to the aesthetic.
Oh.
You walk in. So I think it's going to look a lot different, a lot more branded, and there's a lot of fun stuff to.
We're going to be filming a team MVP 9-dart challenge for off-season social media content there. So everybody gets 9 darts at a board.
Okay.
Last question of the day for Simon.
Okay.
How did Werder Bremen do yesterday morning?
They drew 2-2 after a 1-0 lead and a 2-1 lead.
Wow.
Not bad. The worst team. So it was a mix of emotions between, man, they're getting lucky that they actually could win this game, and why are they worse than literally the worst team in the league? But okay.
Don't trust sleepers. Wow, that's a good one.
Sounds good.
Well, that was episode
29. Should episode 30? I don't know what the schedule looks like next week, but should episode 30 be live at Gyropalooza?
I'm fine with that.
Is that a possibility?
I'm down to try and make that happen.
Yeah.
If so, yeah.
With a live audience?
With a live audience.
Ooh. I can try and swing that.
We can see.
No promises.
I think that's kind of...
I don't think people just have an hour to kill there.
Well, no, they don't. They can just be walking by.
Gyropalooza minisode.
like a 30-minute episode or something.
Well, they can just
a live Q&A or something. Could they can be possibly possible.
Yeah. They can be walking by. I mean, we just have to ask.
We could do a fan interview.
We'll check the schedule. We'll check the schedule, people.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Also, big thanks to everybody who's been sending the emails. They have been. Honestly, we have to do almost like another episode or just get to a few more. We had special guest Will this week.
Yeah, keep them coming because
they're really great. I've been reading them, the most recent ones coming in, and I really like the questions. So we have some interesting discussions already queued up from you guys, which is the whole point of this podcast is to...
Let's record on Thursday or something next week. Pre-Gyropalooza.
Yeah, okay, bring your mics. I'll record whenever.
Yeah.
You're ripping home.
I'm ripping home. I'm
so
leaving.
Safe driving. And really, best of luck today out there on your chase card.
I don't need luck.
Best of skill. And
I don't want luck.
Go enjoy your final round on tour this season, boys. Try to go soak it in and be proud of yourselves that you get to play the final round. Not everybody gets to say that. Only 33 guys can say that they made it to play all of the rounds on tour this year. So go have fun in the sun, in the wind, in the rain. That's about to hit.
I concur.
Crush Pepper XL.
Also want to say thanks for having me. I know guests weren't in the format, and I'm honored to be on here. And I think I got to definitely give my parents a shout out on this because I don't know if you know this, but they're probably the biggest Crush Pepper fans.
I didn't know that. Cool.
And yeah, they're subscribed to y'all on YouTube. I don't know about you, Joey. Maybe. But
please no.
Diehard fan.
Shout out to my parents.
Yeah. Shout out.
And of course my wife and family who let me come hang out with you guys
kidding.
All the time. So
yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys, and we will catch you
next time.
Yo.
Bye bye.
Oh, you didn't have one queued up?